study took place in Texas. And with respect to the title of the session, Time Series, it's something related to that because I do look at time series, but I think I treat it slightly different with respect to processes occurring at the surface. You'll see that there are a number of co-authors here, and this is generally kind of the nature of our work. When we do remote sensing type activities, we end up having to call upon a whole lot of other people who can bring expertise, and so we often stick together and include each other on some of our work as long as we're involved in participating in getting the data. So today, the spectral characteristics of turbulence under strong advection of saturation deficit. I think what I'll just say for that strong saturation deficit, I'm assuming that if you haven't had a lot of experience with, say, for example, micrometeorology, it is the movement of dry air, say, for example, originates from somewhere and it moves over to another area that has water as a source. So, like, think of Southwest Texas, where you have a lot of irrigation and you're surrounded by a lot of warm, dry surfaces. And so you get a lot of heat that gets transported over, and it enhances the evaporation. Okay, by way of some opening remarks, when I use the letters SEB, I'm talking about the surface energy balance. And what that basically comes down to, and for a lot of different people, it means different things, but in general, it has to do with being able to quantify evaporation off a surface, okay? If you have an energy balance that includes your generally your four terms, your available energy, which would be the sun coming in from above, soil heat flux, which is the heat that's stored down below, and it can go up or down, and then evaporation, and then the sensible heat flux that emits off the warm surfaces. Understanding evapotranspiration is critical for many hydrological processes, and in fact, it is the most difficult term to really get a good value from. It's critical for water-limited areas for management purposes, and it has to do with a lot with how the sensible heat flux and the evaporation. When I say LE, I'm talking about latent heat of evaporation, so that's synonymous with an amount of water that is evaporating. Now, typically, the method that we use eddy covariance. Now, eddy covariance is an approach that is probably the most physically sound approach there is to measure evaporation from a surface. However, it has a lot of, I won't say problems, but it has a lot of challenges because of the way it was derived, which was initially over very uniform, very wet surfaces, the ideal condition. But the reality is, as once we got the technique pretty well down, we had to run up against the wall of reality, which is that most of the surface is heterogeneous, okay? And so this is some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about. And looking at some spectral characteristics of these processes. If I wanted to draw a really simple picture, if we look at this blue bar, you can just imagine that the blue bar in itself is just a tower in which we will mount some eddy covariance instruments. And I'll show a slide of that in a moment. But essentially, right now we're looking at a field of corn in Iowa, and it's big and it's uniform, and this is kind of like the ideal situation for eddy covariance to make energy balance measurements. If we look at these circles in here, the eddies that are passing through, it's just movement of air, and they generally have circular motion and they have vertical and horizontal extent. Think of a dust devil, for example, you see that moving across a surface or something like that, and that's kind of like an eddy. Generally, what you have is eddies that are reasonably sized in terms of vertical extent and horizontal, and they advect, they may be moving along this direction, and as they go past the sensor, which would be the red box, they record information. The eddies contain information about heat, water vapor, wind components, three components of the wind velocity, and ultimately, you can then do a covariance of some of the parameters that you need, and you can get evaporation. Well, as long as the eddies are generally about this size, everything works pretty well. But the reality is, in the surface boundary layer, sometimes we get these things that come in. These would be very, very large eddies, large vertically and also horizontally. They originate from far, far away. And what happens is sometimes they will actually go ahead and penetrate the surface layer, and this sensor that will be located here will record some of that information. Well, the problem is that by the time these eddies get big, and we're talking about, when I say big, typically if you're in a surface, if you're talking about these kind of scale of eddies, they might be 5-6 meters mean diameter coming through. So the parcels are well mixed. They've got some good information about the surface below you, local information. Once you get some of these things could be as large as 500 meters. It could be a kilometer. Sometimes it can be as big as 3 kilometers in diameter. So now you're containing information from a whole lot of places, and it impacts these measurements in here with the eddy covariance, okay? What does that mean? That means we have to deal with finding out what the impact of those intrusions are to the accuracy of the eddy, of the evaporation, which is, again, as I mentioned earlier, one of the most difficult numbers to arrive at. So, by way of objectives, in this study, I want to try to identify some characteristic signatures that are associated with turbulence. This study and the work that I do, especially with high-frequency measurements, is about turbulence, which is the primary mode of transport of these surface components. Want to look at the spectral and co-spectral behavior in the surface boundary layer to see how these are affect how these are moving across the surface. And this is based off of some theoretical work that was initially done by Townsend back in 1971. Which he proposed the idea of active and inactive turbulence, where the active turbulence are generally the smaller eddies that I showed in that very simple diagram, and then the inactive were the very large eddies that were coming through. Later on, McNaughton and Laubach, back in 2000, refined this a little bit and broke it down from an inactive to active to an outer layer scaling, inner layer, and then which was the outer layer, which was the big scale, inner layer was the small scale, but then in fact, they don't exist separately, but oftentimes can exist one on top of the other, okay? All right, by way of describing the site, this is took place at a USDA facility, the Conservation Production Research Lab up in the Panhandle of Texas. This is a laboratory that has a basic and fundamental research to understand productivity under irrigated for dry land cropping systems. This turned out to be a really useful location for us as we were able to address the problem that we were looking at, which is being able to make evaporation measurements under heterogeneous conditions and under conditions which we're going to be experiencing large amounts of dry, warm air that was going to be moving in from the outside. Okay. That particular study tends to be the Bushland evapotranspiration and ag remote sensing. We just simply shortened it to BARIX. Okay, I think this thermal image, Landsat image, gives you a pretty good idea of the kind of problem that we're looking into. The earlier image, when you saw the cornfield, it was very uniform. This is what we like to see. But in this case here, in the southwest part of the United States, you can now see all of the variability. You see cool spots, wet spots, and they're all mixed up. There are various scales, and there is a tremendous amount of mixing. And so when you want to try to make evaporation measurements to get an idea what a water budget might be, say, for example, over one of these sites, or how it's going to impact further down, this is the challenge in being able to address this. If we look at a closer shot of the facility, in this particular field, we had two sites, the dry and the irrigated. We had a couple of eddy covariance stations located to the north and south end. We had some precision weighing lysimeters, which are considered actually the gold standard in evaporation measurements for that particular small site scale of the field. We focused mainly on the irrigated cotton. Just by way of instrumentation, so that if you haven't seen an eddy covariance system, you have a three-dimensional sonic anemometer and an infrared gas analyzer for water vapor and carbon dioxide. We've got incoming radiation measurements, outgoing radiation measurements, saw heat flux down below, and all the other ancillary measurements that are used to try to get and extract and make use of the most important parameters for the surface energy balance exchange. Okay? This was the cotton field. Our measurement height was about 2.5 meters. Measurement period went from May to September. Our sampling frequency were, for the slow response would have been the radiation and some of the temperature sensors was about 10th of hertz. And then for the high frequency, which is the turbulence measurements for water vapor and wind, is at 20 hertz. Data gets averaged out to 15-minute averages in the flux mode, and then the time series. And in the time series, we capture all of the data, all 20 hertz data, for reasons that I'll explain a little bit later here. Maintenance was mainly weekly or more, as the ambient conditions warranted. So some of the data quality conditioning, we do some of the routine stuff for the eddy flux measurements. We get rid of any of the, we have some despiking routines that take care of any anomalous spikes in the high frequency data. When we process the covariance, we take care of the diurnal trends. Suspect data gets removed. Usually suspect data is real obvious. It's -999. And effectively, we apply some of the traditional and standard corrections for eddy flux measurements, which include planar fit and 2D coordinate rotation, heat density effects, and frequency and sensor separation. So in other words, we do a number of pre-processing of the data before we actually start to proceed forward. So I'm going to show some data. Okay, this is the raw data. Typically, this is the starting point. We're looking at the pure raw data. Okay, this is coming off the, in this case here, on the top panel is the lateral direction of the wind speed, U, and down below is the vertical component. Okay, this is 20 hertz data. We're looking at about 15 minutes. The top panel represents a stable condition. In other words, relatively not a very hot surface, but generally after around 7 o'clock in the evening. And then, of course, around 2 o'clock, we're looking at some very unstable conditions, a very hot surface. A couple of things that start to stand out, if you look at just this raw mess of data, nothing has been done to this data at this point. You can actually start to see some of the actual structure of what the turbulence might look like, especially in the unstable period. The stable period, you kind of start to see some little spikes, but generally the data gets kind of squashed because of the stable condition of the boundary layer. If we move on to a finer scale, up here we have, again, U is up here, W, the vertical, and then the lateral, and again, the lateral and W. What we're looking at here is two conditions, stable and unstable. What we generally see on this case here, we're looking at about 25 seconds worth of data. Okay, this is very high resolution data, and what you can actually see is you can see distinct features and structures where the wind speed increases and decreases, and these are associated with eddy scales. Notice that under the unstable condition, notice how more distinct and refined the vertical velocity components are compared to the more stable part, okay? So this starts to tell us a couple of things. Two things for sure. First, you've got structure and resolution at the high, at the fine scale, and then you also have structure at the bigger scale, which I'll show you here in a moment. This was just another example for temperature and humidity. Temperature is up on top, humidity down on the bottom. Under stable conditions, notice that up here we have temperatures that are decreasing for this one size of eddy coming through here, and then also you have water vapor increasing. So here in the stable case, as warm air is encountering the canopy and there's evaporation occurring, the temperature is decreasing, but then the evaporation is increasing. And likewise, now for the unstable case, now you have two cases here where temperatures from very hot surfaces are rising, and as long as there's a source of water, you're going to also be having typical increases in the water. So what this tells us is that indeed, at a wide range of scales, of turbulence. We can clearly see that under these conditions that almost all forms of turbulence are present and have to be accounted for in some of the measurements. The vapor pressure deficit, which is just the vapor pressure of the air minus the saturation, two very distinct features, stable and unstable. Again, 1900 hours, notice the density and everything is squashed. You don't see a whole lot of structure, but you do see it over here for the unstable case. David, how am I doing on time?
You have 10 minutes.
Oh, good.
5 minutes and then take questions.
Okay. I'll spend just briefly over here. When we look at some of the eddy flux data, in this case here, the sensible heat flux on this part over here, and then also the latent heat flux on the two top panels, those are usually like about 15-minute averages. And what you typically get is you get three spikes coming through here for this particular day. And in general, this looks like what we think, what it normally does look like. Now, if we go into finer resolution down below on the same two, the same data, but only now we're outputting it as 5-minute averages. One of the general large-scale features are still retained, but now we're starting to see some of the finer scale, okay? Which shows us that it actually could show up in the both not only in large scale but the finer scale as well. One of the things that we initially like to do is use an Ogive function to go ahead and try to identify contributions of varying eddy scales. In this case here, the Ogive is just generally, what it does is essentially it does a cumulative flux under for a particular type of period. Okay. What it might look like on this data here in Texas, for example, on the very top, this was just an Ogive function for temperature, the covariance of T and Q for temperature and humidity. And this is typically what it looks like, kind of an S-shaped curve, where this is frequency on the X scale. And it starts to increase until finally, when you get up to about here, you're not getting any more information from those scales. Okay? And so at about somewhere up in here, you can drop straight down onto the frequency scale, invert the x-axis, and you'll get an averaging period, because that averaging period will basically tell you where all the information came from for that particular period. This is what we expect. I use this to show that this is what we expect to see. But here's something that we start to see that is a bit peculiar. Under these conditions in Texas, it's going up and it decreases. Goes up, decreases. Until finally, somewhere back in here, it levels off. Now think about this. If this is a cumulative integral, then what is happening here? Why do we get negative accumulation? Okay. What this represents is it represents contributions that are negative, that are in reverse, that are actually counter-gradient to what is occurring at the surface. So that clearly tells you that what the sensors are picking up, they're picking up information from areas that have absolutely nothing to do with the surface that you're measuring. This is a point of concern if you want to try to make some determination as to what's happening at the surface. For heat flux, down here on the next two, same type of water vapor for WQ. This was sensible heat flux, and this was the water vapor. Again, very unusual shapes. Another example. Again, we look at TQ, covariance TQ looks good, everything's fine. And then the reason why I show this is because prior to this, this was at 10 and 11, 1 hour to the next, okay? So you're going to see some variability. The very next 2 hours, now from 12 until 1, we see rather unique, again, different. You see a very sharp discontinuity, and it is very vivid over here under the unstable conditions. Okay. So what this tells us again is now we have some information that's showing that for a long time we'd assumed that the low frequency, the large scale eddies that we knew were there, but we were kind of hoping and theoretically seemed that would not penetrate the surface boundary layer, in fact do penetrate the surface boundary layer. The last one here for the Ogive, I think I'm just going to pass that one up. Because this is under stable, very unstable conditions. This is where now you have heat moving into an irrigated surface, and now the Ogive curve is actually in reverse of what we normally see for T for WT for heat. All right, let's go on to the next one. We look at some, what's that, 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Thank you. Okay, we look at some power spectra curves for a moment just for the velocity components. This is U, and this is for both stable and unstable periods. Some of the Kansas curves that were normally done were done for ideal conditions, and here we clearly see that in Texas, and this is routinely what happens throughout the day, you get very, very large features here. This is a huge contribution from a very large eddy that's penetrating through here. The peaks are generally the same, but you can see a lot more variability, largely due to the unsteadiness of the wind. Down below, again, very unique features. Blue noise occurring here at the very high frequency because of very, very windy conditions. But the reality is, these conditions are what are going to be considered normal, okay? All right, the V component shows a very similar type of a pattern. We're still trying to make sense what's happening over here with respect to the deviations down over here, because this is a very sharp, there's almost an entire, almost like a significant spectral gap occurring right about in this frequency, okay? And then again, typically sharp drop-offs. WWs look pretty good for the most part. They appear to be pretty much stable and follow what was normally established in the Kansas experiment, but I'll show you here in the next slide another way of representing the data. The data were processed as semi-log. This is a log-log representation of the same UVW components. And in fact, in the Kansas, under neutral conditions, this is generally has like about a zero slope. But in fact, under here, you get something like a negative 0.2 for the vertical wind velocity. And what that really means is that means that, again, these large eddies are finding their way down to the surface. And W is the biggest one that we have to worry about, because that's what's carrying the flux for heat and water and other gases. Temperature, we end up looking at, typically we expect things to look along about the minus 5/3 scale, but in fact, down in the subinertial range, you're going to get some of that slightly start to approach, but generally it's more like about minus 1, okay? And what we are typically seeing is some of the interlayer scaling tends to hold near the lower frequency, higher frequencies here, but in fact, we got huge contributions occurring over here. And this region right in here where the transition is, the combined layer scaling, so it seems to start to follow with what McNaughton and Lauten had proposed. Finally, covariance, two periods, red is the stable, blue is the unstable, and again, we can see that under these type of conditions of advection, for example, which are occurring, they do have an impact on the overall magnitude of the covariance and the transport of water vapor, and likewise for the sensible heat flux, very, very sharp on the red, stable, very sharp drop-offs in the subinertial range, indicating tremendous amount of energy being transferred to the surface. Okay, by way of conclusions, we talked about some of the distinct ramp-like structures. In the unstable case, OGI functions really help us a lot in suggesting that some of these large-scale motions actually do penetrate the surface boundary layer, which tells us that we're going to have to figure something out in terms of how to account for this, because it will impact the magnitude of the eddy covariance. Here's the sad little dirty secret of eddy covariance. You're always going to get a number. You can always count on that. But the problem is you just don't know how valuable, you know, what the actual validity of that number is. Okay, these large-scale penetration, these large eddies are going to penetrate the surface. They're going to affect the exchange of scalars and mass. Subspectra we found were substantially enhanced for U and V. The outer layer scaling influence telling us that there really is impacts. And I think I'll just go ahead and shut it off here. I will say that we did see significant deviations from Kansas. They do occur. The reality is that's very normal for many regions in the Southwest region.